Hey, Raymond.
Howdy. How are you today?
I'm all right. It's a
All right.
beautiful day here in Colorado.
Nice. What part of Colorado are you in?
City called Longmont. It's
Okay.
about 45 miles north of Denver.
Okay. Cool.
And
I'll
you're in
be
New
spending a bunch of
Mexico?
time. Well, I have property there and the framework for a community there, but I am currently in Missouri building community, and I'll be heading to Boulder and be spending some time there
Oh, cool.
pretty heavily for the next few months.
Longmont is just 12 miles from Boulder.
All right.
Yeah, and
Cool.
I'm there all the time, so.
Right on.
Hey, John.
Hello.
Hi, John.
Hi,
John,
Raymond.
Raymond, John.
Nice to meet you.
Yeah, you too.
I think we'll have a few other people joining us, so we can just hang for a little bit.
Yeah.
There's Jeffrey.
Hi.
Hi, Jeffrey.
Hey, Jeffrey. Where are you gentlemen located? John and Jeffrey.
I'm in Quebec City in Canada.
I'm in Manhattan. It's very hot here today.
Oh, wow.
Here too.
Yeah, it's a heat wave. In Missouri. You're in Missouri?
It's hot here too. Well, we just
Yeah.
got a storm blow through, which cooled it off.
That's nice.
But just keeps it humid as ever, which you're no stranger to in Manhattan.
Yeah, I looked at the humidity this morning. It was 96%, but it wasn't raining.
I've already changed my shirt three times today.
Oh my goodness.
And I just took a cold shower and I'm still sweating. It's terrible.
One of these days, I'm going to find out what that actually means, because obviously, if the air is not 96% water, it means what does
Help.
it?
Well, we have a physicist here who
Yeah,
might be able to
that
explain.
can
The quantum level, though. Explain it at the quantum level.
Oh, yeah, sure.
Doug.
Hello.
Hey, Doug.
Is it
So,
hot in
Ray,
Kentucky?
I'm actually physically sweating very, very profusely right now. I was going to sit outside, but I took a jog to get to my Wi-Fi spot. So, pardon the dripping if you notice.
I feel like the
There's
odd man out. It's completely beautiful. It's like perfect. It's paradisical here in Colorado. I went for a I walked my dog this morning, and I was reflecting on how utterly perfect the weather was. There wasn't a cloud in the sky. It's a kind of cool breeze. It was sunny. Everything's in bloom. Everything is green. But it's not always that way. One of the things they say in Colorado is, you want the weather to change, wait 10 minutes. And that certainly can be true.
Oxygen.
That's why I'm coming that way.
Relative humidity is the ratio of the current hu absolute humidity to the highest possible absolute humidity. So that's why it's just a ratio.
Okay. So if it hit 100%, then it will rain. You will be,
I
right?
guess
Is that what
so.
that means?
Well, that would be the saturation point, right? The humidity saturation point. But if the air is warmer, it could hold more moisture,
Yeah.
which is why warmer, weather can be much more severe. At least that's my rudimentary understanding of the meteorology. So it's Caroline said she was going to join us, but she might be late, or what I'm just thinking is, we used to start at 1 and we switched to starting to at noon, so that might be an issue. But I had a kind of loose framework in mind for how we could conduct this talk, because we're kind of meeting different contexts, and the four of us, myself, John, Jeffrey, and Doug, have had numerous conversations by this point. And Caroline joins us. She and I have also had many conversations, and they've spanned a range of topics and subjects. And some of it has been philosophical and cosmological. Some has been about science and technology. Some has been about society and culture. And some has been about kind of meta, what we're doing in this cultural space that we've been developing called Cosmos. And part of what I think is the overlapping interest between Cosmos and what you're doing, Raymond, with CoGov and with Holochain, is that we have this aspiration towards or intention to participate in a larger emergent happening on many scales, from local scales of how human beings interact and interrelate with each other in small groups, to planetary scales, like what kind of a civilization are we moving towards? What kind of a world do we want to contribute to and co-create? And so I thought that we could start with a few, just a little context for how we met, and that, you know, I could lay that out very briefly, but then I'd like to say a little bit about Cosmos and lay that out for anyone who would be watching this or listening to it later, and then turn the attention to you, Raymond, and CoGov, and learn more about your vision and what you're working on, and try to get as clear a picture of that, or at least as sufficiently clear a picture of that as we can, so that in the latter part of the dialogue, we can move into, you know, more open questions and more constructive interaction around that, the interface of, you know, where does CoGov and its vision intersect with Cosmos and its vision, both of which I think are emerging. Like, they're not final, you know, things at this point. So it's a creative process that we're undertaking, even right here in this conversation, I think.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that sounds great to me.
Cool. All right, so we're going to go officially for 90 minutes, so until 1:30 Mountain Time or 3:30 Eastern. And then if anyone wants to hang on afterwards and continue, we can leave the line open for that. But Raymond, you and I met at the Holochain Hackathon in Denver a few weeks ago, and we just talked for maybe 30 minutes or so, and I got the gist of what you were doing. Perhaps you got a bit of the gist of what I was up to, and you shared a paper with me, a link to a document called the Digital Co-Governance Web Doc, which is accessible at cogov.tech. And so I shared that in our forum at Infinite Conversations, and suggested that, you know, based on the conversation we had, we could follow up and read this and study it and then invite you on to talk about it so that we could, you know, deepen our understanding and see where the overlap is and where the potential, like, applications are for what this is. So, so we'll get into what Holochain is. We've talked a bit about it amongst ourselves, and we've done a couple of other sessions just for context on distributed, decentralized kind of technologies. Like, we did a Cosmos Cafe, a discussion like this on democracy.earth. And then we did another talk more on the technology side, looking at screen culture and larger systems of media and politics, and how technology and economics kind of collude to play out certain pattern dynamics and power dynamics on you know, large and intimate scales. So we've kind of had philosophical conversations. We've looked at, you know, multiple aspects of this. But I think the core question that I keep coming back to is, okay, so what do we do? How do we respond to that? What's our response to this situation that we're all collectively in and we're also individually dealing with in our own particular ways? And so, maybe I'll save this for later, but one of the things, just to put a flag on it, that attracts me about Holochain is this distributed architecture, and also what they call a user or an agent-centric architecture. And there are reasons for that, I think, at the, you know, computer level, computer science level, but the social implications of it are what are particularly interesting. And where I think that there could be this overlap with Cosmos. So I would like to kind of kick this off to read a summary that I wrote over the weekend of a kind of ideal vision of what I think Cosmos is or could be. And it's going to be, you know, again, with the user, the agent-centric, this is my version of it. This is something that I'm articulating, doing my best job to capture various themes and concepts that we've discussed in our groups. But I don't want to say that I capture them completely or fully, or you know, this would be a starting point for a discussion, just so you know, like the status of this particular articulation. But for me, it's the most current kind of complete version that I could come up with. And so this will be new to Jeffrey and John and Doug. And again, it's ideal, and it's not like an elevator pitch either. It's something that you could read like on one page and get like a gist of, okay, what are these people up to? So I have a train going by, but I'll go on. Actually, I think I'm gonna have to wait for this train. I live about a block from tracks that go right through our neighborhood. So Longmont was a, frontier city. It was actually created by a group of investors from Chicago. They bought a square mile of land and set up a couple of neighborhoods, and there was agriculture, mining, and so forth around here. But
just a half a mile from the railroad track.
Yeah. I'm on the other side of the tracks, I think.
I might have missed it earlier, but where are you located right now, Raymond?
I'm in Ava, Missouri, building community here. Gotcha. And I'll be heading to base largely out of Boulder here in a few more weeks. So,
wow.
Be right cool. Next to Marco.
Okay. All right, so the train's gone. All right, so again, this is an ideal kind of statement, but there's a lot of actuality. Like, we've been working on this now for at least three years. And I guess part of it, I think one last thing I want to say is that we're working on this, but we're also, like, I think on the verge of moving to some other level, right? Of what happens next. So there's a bit of that in here as well. Cosmos is a community platform and media company, cooperatively owned by its members and creative agents. Its mission is to catalyze collective genius and propagate planetary culture in service of birthing an ecological civilization. Working through literature and the arts, technology and science, spirituality and activism, Cosmos provides a constellation of emergent systems and ethical designs for learning, collaboration, and exchange among peers. It's an experimental microcosm, a dynamic field of relationships in which we may reimagine ourselves in the whole. On a practical level, Cosmos offers its members a virtual space where they can develop, produce, and market or gift their work to the world. As well, it lets them discover, sponsor, and respond to the work of others. I'm working on the language for this. I want to add something parenthetically about sparks of genius and so forth. But members participate in deep conversations, experience creative fellowship, and contribute to shaping the larger vision and project. These activities are currently take place through our websites, infiniteconversations.com, metapsychosis.com, and then Theory of Everybody, which is in development. However, future versions of Cosmos could sponsor local in-person events and have physical locations or access to venues through a network for community gatherings, creative intensives, contemplative retreats, and integral education. An internal currency, which we call Litcoin, and distributed governance structure are being conceived to harness and channel the collective intelligence of our living systems in the most beneficial ways we can imagine. At this time, activity on the platform centers on reading and writing groups, online dialogues like this one, media production like podcasts and videos, and literary publishing. We are also working on the design and evolution of Cosmos itself. Our long-term vision is to produce world-changing art that inspires countless people to join the cosmic adventure. And so I'd like to ask you, Raymond, like part of, you know, what we'll need is a way to bring this collective intelligence, you know, into reality, into real life, to actually make it work in the world. Mm-hmm. And so I'm really wondering how CoGov might be able to help with that. And, you know, also what your role is in the CoGov project and, you know, what your vision is for what it could be.
Awesome. Yeah. Well, thank you so much for that introduction. I'm really honored that you invited me to be here and share and meet all you guys. And and sort of reiterating what the vision of Cosmos is, which, you know, we got to talk a bit about in Denver, and that is definitely exciting. And I very much see where there's this layover and connection, and I'll elaborate on. So Cosmos will certainly have, it sounds to me, like some software tools to help implement some of this stuff that you're describing. And in that, and in the fact that it is software, user accessible software that has a user interface and has a mean of that user access, it is something that CoGov is not. Because CoGov does not, on its own, present a user interface. It is not an application. It is not a specific prescription of how governance should happen. What it is, it's a framework by which multiple modes of user interface and governance and even currency exchange and value flow exchange can happen in a way that is standardized and transparent. So in other words, the specific ways of governance that you decide on for your Cosmos cosmology would be able to be implemented and standardized down into with CoGov in such a way that any other organization embarking on this kind of mission of collective intelligence coordinated at scale, right, through multiple membranes of different councils, probably something along those lines, of people all contributing, have the ability to interact with each other in a really simplified way. Just like like currently, you know, things are pretty standardized in a lot of ways in terms of doing business in the world. A lot of people are doing business in the U.S. dollar, for instance, or some derivative currency that's based on the U.S. dollar. So there's a whole banking system. There's whole standards of accounting. There's infrastructure all over the world of accountants and attorneys to help you figure all that out and establish company membranes with various filings for corporations and different entities. And all of this has led to centralizations of power on various levels to where at this point on the planet, I think a lot of discussion, I think it's probably happening in circles like yours and in general is there's some downsides to that centralization of power, that what has ended up happening through just agreeing to these standards in the world, agreeing to interact with this standard type of money and these standard ways of incorporating our businesses and filing our taxes and all these things, we've actually let ourselves down a road where we're actually, as a general citizenry, we're disempowered in a lot of ways by what started as a helpful means of standardization became, in a lot of ways, a control system. So that some small group gets to dictate how we do business. And of course, through their capability within the system, has the means to potentially strongly suggest or manipulate certain ways of doing business that, of course, behoove them and their ultimate continued gain of power and wealth on the world. And I, you know, so there's a lot of really interesting discussion happening in various circles. And I think at the core of Holochain and CoGov is the desire to provide alternative means of doing business and interacting in ways, bringing forth the most authentic expressions of the individuals to be able to coordinate themselves at scale in ways that can serve the needs of the people at absolutely minimum at the level they're being served now and you know, theoretically enhance the basic needs of people being met on the planet significantly, because there's a lot of people going without. And I think that's at the core of the philosophy underlying what we're doing with those projects, Holochain and CoGov. And so agent centricity is something you brought up. And yeah, and the social implications of that are critical, because what that says is ultimately, and this is something that's discussed and perhaps heatedly debated still, but it does essentially represent that the individual sovereignty is the primary measure by which we judge how we're doing in community. Right? And do the individuals have access to freedom and sovereignty to really follow their own path and notice the ways that in community we share common needs and wants and desires and goals and to voluntarily come together when that sharing is present and to be able to not when it's not and to recognize that that's paramount. And so if that is assumed to be a truth and that in fact community does exist much stronger, a deep sense of community, a deep sense of the ability to work together and the desire to work together, and to build things as a community and together is enhanced when that underlying individual sovereignty is present. So that's the theory, and I think that's what we all stand on in this development work. So agent centricity at the protocol level is what Holochain provides.
So let's pause right there, because I think that there's a distinct... something to understand here. And even before we get to like Holochain versus blockchain or things like that, there's a distinction between a centralized technology and a decentralized technology. And like, for example, if we're on Facebook and we're constructing our media persona, right, on a platform like that. But Facebook just being one example. All of that data that constitutes who we are represented to be in that virtual space is ultimately controlled by that central player. So what we see in our newsfeed, what we're allowed to share, the subtle dynamics of the interactions, right, which are very complex, are controlled by that centralized system. a decentralized system like Holochain works differently how?
Yeah, great point. So this is another, like Facebook is another great example of centralization of power and control and ultimately data, right? And so, yeah, what Holochain does is if you were going to have a social network in Holochain, it would ultimately function largely the same for the user experience, right? But it'd give a lot more flexibility. But what's happening underlying is that when you communicate with the interface, you're actually communicating with your own device. And what's happening through the magic of Holochain is that changes you make to the shared data structure of what you're trying to share with the world, things on your timeline, your pictures, your profile, things that you want to be shared with the world, are then gossiped between nodes. And so there is no one central store of data. Each time you're accessing the interface, you're actually accessing your own device that has its own version of the data. And as you make data changes, it shares those changes out within what's called the distributed hash table, which takes from some of the technology that's inherent in BitTorrent or peer-to-peer file sharing. So it's well-tested technology that has proved to be unstoppable and uncontainable and unenclosable, and thus ultimately empowering each individual to have control over their data, so it becomes an agent-centric environment.
Okay, that gets, I think, to some of the technical side of it. One way that I've thought about this is, this is going to kind of sound out there and, you know, probably have no space, there's no place for it in the technical discussion, but, in terms of soul, in terms of like who you are as a person, like if technology, if our virtual selves, are actually an externalization of our soul, it's the difference between having control over your own soul, in a sense, right? Mm-hmm. Versus your soul being colonized and owned by all these other entities who control how that soul gets to enact itself in the world.
I like that.
Okay, so mm-hmm. I mean, what I see in the Holochain is that each so-called agent, that's another technical word, that's another word for a person. Right. Although there could be agents technically who are not human people, right?
That's right. Right. Or one person could have multiple agencies. Yeah.
Okay. But the idea is that each agent ultimately has they have autonomy over their own soul, but there are still network level in the Holochain kind of architecture ways of coordinating those agents in order to get things done that they wouldn't be able to just by themselves. Because that's the benefit of centralization, right?
You can
get a small group of people together with a whole bunch of money and a whole bunch of technical expertise, and they could build a platform that serves millions or billions of people. And they're able to do that now, you know, relatively efficiently, relatively cheaply compared to, you know, in the past, right? So that's what technology has allowed. But the downside of it is then you have that small group of people owning and controlling the means by which all these other people are even able to interact with one another.
Yeah.
So how do we shift the power dynamics so that, you know, the participants in the system have an actual influence and actual appropriate level of control over the environment in which they're able to, you know, do business together or interact with one another or organize with
them. Right. Again, so yeah, I'll answer. It might be technical, and I appreciate your help in, you know, translating them to a less technical sense. That's great. And I'll try to do my best to do the same. But yeah, again, so the interface that you're actually experiencing when you use software, right, like you pointed out, the goal is to coordinate in some way multiple people together and to create an efficient means of that coordination, as opposed to like writing letters to each other and sending them in the mail, carbon copied to 15 different locations. We've used digital technology and software to really enable, and the internet, of course, to enable that coordination to happen much more efficiently. And it's led to that centralization of power, so that you're always relying on somebody to be the center coordinator for all that data coming in. Some database administrator has access to all of that data and can manipulate it at their will. Again, Holochain flips that on its head, because each device, each piece of hardware that's interfacing with the software side to coordinate actually serves up its own interface. So the entire interface, all the application, all the pieces of digital code that make up that application, both the back-end business logic and the front-end look and feel, are stored on your local device. All of the data that's critical, that's been coordinated and aligned in such a way that makes sense and means something to our real lives, right, that can feel important in various ways, is also stored on your local device. So you have complete control to disconnect yourself from that system at any time. You have complete control to change that code at any time, change the interface, to change the data, at least to suggest data changes that will be then validated by every other node in the network, see if they agree with that data change, right? But it empowers you as an individual to do all that. Mm-hmm. So it fundamentally flips that whole thing on its head. No more do you wake up one day and Facebook has changed the whole interface that used to be able to do things a certain way. Now it's completely different. That possibility of that even happening is now gone.
So, I mean, what else should we understand about CoGov? Like just at a basic level?
Yeah. So CoGov essentially takes the best of that world, that agent centricity, that local storage and control over your software and interfaces, and says, how do we apply that to the human layer, how we actually get along and govern each other in the world? If we apply some of those same principles, but yet recognize the complexity, the much greater complexity of human relations and what that entails, we can enter into a greater discussion. So CoGov just simply proposes how we take those same principles and apply it to human interaction rather than just node interaction, digital nodes performing their conversations largely in an automated way, you know, but those things are triggered based on a conscious being having an interaction with the software and hardware. So what do those conscious beings do with each other and how do they interact is a much more complicated environment that a CoGov attempts to address.
So a couple of ways I've imagined this, and maybe these could be like starting points for, you know, discussion. Are, you know, we're all artists, writers, you know, intellectuals of various kinds. We're transdisciplinary people doing coming with different expertises and different experiences and working on, you know, starting to work on their own projects where, you know, I can imagine that there are many, many small projects going on in a larger space, and that those projects are, and the people that are participating in them are able to use shared resources, platform level resources, storage, media production, kind of resources like this here. We're talking on a Zoom chat. It's producing a recording. The recording is going to be published on our forum. It's going to go on YouTube. And if we had a platform that can coordinate those various activities, and that was unlike the Facebooks and, you know, other centralized platforms in the world, were at the architectural level and at the governance level organized around maximizing the individual, you know, individual liberty and freedom and creativity for the best possible overall result. If that was kind of how we tweaked the algorithms, then that could be pretty powerful, because this is something I think people naturally want to do. They want to they want to communicate with one another. They want to collaborate with one another. They want to create something that's greater than themselves, and they also want to, you know, be served by that. By that process and those systems. Like, they want to find individual fulfillment. And that's what I want. That's the kind of world I want to live in. And, you know, as we've discussed in other cafes, we want to move towards a different kind of civilization than the kind that we seem to be moving towards in the current trajectory. So, you know, we have this leverage point of technology and of social organization that we could use to try something different. Try something different than the way things are currently being done. And moreover, to create a space where we're not presupposing the answers. We're presupposing some ground conditions, some parameters, right? But then allowing the intelligence of the people who participate in the system to generate better answers than we could possibly you know, we could possibly do individually, or if we were stuck in our old ways and in our old paradigms. So I'm excited about, you know, the potential for collaboration and for like thinking these things through and like actually designing things that work for the kind of thing that we're already doing. But I don't know how that all looks. And
yeah,
as I mentioned, we've had many different kinds of conversations in different small groups. And so like Jeffrey, Doug, John, you know, they weren't at the hackathon. They may not have even been, you know, been interested in a hackathon. So how, you know, what are the connection points between there? What are the questions that they might have? And, you know, this will get posted on the forum so others could watch it and could respond with their own questions or feedback or you know, whatever they have. I mean, that part of this is to, like, this is part of our inquiry, really, into
right.
how we govern ourselves.
Yeah, yeah. So, wow, it's such an eloquent speaker. It's such a great, actually, you're representing very much exactly what the intentions of CoGov are. So, thank you. And yeah, so a couple of points there. In one sense of very much each individual feeling empowered to discover what their passion is and how to contribute that and be able to invest in their energy into the things that they're passionate about in a way that through inherent social coordination is appreciated by their community, greater community, right? CoGov very much sets out with the goal to have that exist. It very much sets out with the goal, another thing you mentioned, to allow an organic field of exploration and what the best means of doing that are without saying that it has the answers, right? So, but what it does do is give us a standard metric by which we can look at all the different deviations of how to accomplish governance and spin up organizations and for in which people are finding their passions and doing the things they love and look at what's working and what's not and being able to replicate what's working and allow what's not to dissipate. So by having the standards in place, a browsable ecosystem of organizations, we get to have that data. We get to have that, get to go to that next level of abstraction, which I actually tend to consider actually a higher level of consciousness, right? Like to me, like the high level of consciousness is not some woo-woo spiritual term. It's actually just simply the ability to have a greater and deeper understanding of the patterns that you're involved in a social sense or in any sense really, right? But especially in a social sense. So your consciousness, your greater consciousness, your understanding of what's happening, the patterns that are happening in the system allow you to make smarter decisions. And if your intention is to create a goodness and a freedom and that environment that we discussed for everybody to pursue their passions, et cetera, you can use that consciousness and that access to that data for us all to create that together. And so that's really some of the fundamental goals. And I guess I've just tended to start explaining more technical aspects of how that looks, but we don't have to either.
Well, why don't we open it up for feedback, comments, questions, thoughts, ideas. There's plenty of technical stuff in the paper about different styles, different ways that the, you know, different application potentials, let's say for the framework. And we could get into those as well. But I think whatever's on everyone's mind, let's bring that up.
Yeah, for sure. And I'll just state, I'm glad to do that now. And I just want to state one other thing that the goal of what I proposed in the paper is to have boiled things down to their base standards so that it is complete freedom to operate within. So that every idea of governance and every means of accomplishing coordination can happen in its most organic way, and yet it still is facilitated for on the underlying layer of CoGov. And so so one of the things I love to discover is if I've missed anything there, like this is the time to discover that. Cool.
All right.
So you say it's not an app. I get that. But it's not exactly just a set of principles either. It's a kind of, so I'm still trying to struggle with understanding what exactly we're talking about here. Is it a set? Is it a suite of development tools that's coming, or, you know, this kind of question I guess I have.
Sure. So it is technically called a mixin, and in Holochain, a mixin is essentially a library. So it's a standard library that a developer can use, bring into their application, and know that they're doing accessing this layer in a way that other applications are also accessing the same layer. So you have this standard of coordination across applications. What it actually boils down to is in Holochain, there are your zones that they call, which is basically a record description. Okay, it's a schema description of when you store a piece of data in a database, what is that data? What does it mean? And how do we know when you want to store that record in our shared data store called the DHT that it's valid? So what Holochain largely is about is defining those records and how they're made up, what they're made up of, what data is important to that record, and the validations of that data. So then when it's added or changed in the shared data store, we can know that that was a valid change. So CoGov proposes a set of those things, a set of zones and validations for those zones. So things like one of the things that's proposed is no matter what means of group governance you have, at some point, somebody makes something that looks just like a proposal. Hey, we should do this. And almost inevitably, there's some kind of discussion that occurs and some iteration on that proposal. And at some point, there's an agreement to move forward under that proposal or not. And so those key events are all laid out as record, as zones, means that you would store those types of events and the outcomes of any decisions or discussions around those events and the validations that let us know that that was, in fact, true and valid according to all the stakeholders in that collective.
Does that make sense, Jeffrey?
Yeah.
Yeah, it's fine. So essentially one would have to have one's own application running on Holochain in order to use your set of libraries in relation to it.
That's definitely correct at this stage. Yep. Okay. There's totally the possibility that we could agree on these standards in a wider spectrum. But I think, you know, I guess there's this point at which I consider you've drank the Holochain Kool-Aid. And what it means is that you've understood the critical nature of the openness of the application development environment that Holochain has brought forth. So, and from within which you have complete freedom to explore and build anything you want. And so we're at the point where you ultimately reach the logical conclusion that most people reach once they've, you know, kind of drank this Kool-Aid, is that why would you want to do it any other way? And so that's kind of where I'm sitting. And, you know, it's not to say that that I'm closed off or that we should be closed off to interoperability with things outside of Holochain at all. But it just does kind of really feel that once you truly take in what Holochain is doing, that it really is a great means of building every type of application. So our social net, Facebook, should be replaced with a distributed application built on Holochain, or distributed application certainly, and Holochain being the only distributed application development environment I really am fully aware of that follows these principles of agent centricity. Everything we use, all the critical apps, the Twitters and the Airbnbs and the Ubers, like we don't need, especially with the Airbnb and Uber, we don't really need a company to be in the middle of that transaction. We need a piece of shared software to be in the middle of that transaction. Mm. When you want a ride, and somebody wants to give a ride, you can align. We don't necessarily need a company in the middle to take a piece of a financial exchange to make that happen. That's one of many examples. So that's the ultimate vision of what can be accomplished ultimately.
Doug, you have a question?
I have two questions. A quick comment that I'm a taste tester, I suppose. So I haven't fully had the Kool-Aid experience because I'm still trying to wrap my head around the technological part. But my questions are, I guess, going off what we're talking about right now and something that Marco and maybe Caroline introduced to me called Sandstorm. So maybe you can talk a little bit more about that, Marco. I don't know if you've heard of it, Raymond. But that's where Rocket Chat, and there are many different applications on there that are decentralized, that are made by humans and have the intention to be linked with something like Holochain, I believe. But maybe you could expand on that, Marco. And is this something that the CoGov is hoping to do, or is that, it seems like there's a different layer and CoGov would be kind of the underlying foundation, and that step would be the Sandstorm, would be something else. And I'll save my other question later.
But I can say what Sandstorm is. It's basically a site that lets you launch open source applications. So it has a collection of open source applications, meaning that anybody could use them, adapt them, change them. The code itself is not proprietary. It's not owned by a given company. And then Sandstorm is just a collection of them. So Rocket Chat is one example. It's a chat application. There are text editors. There are, you know, Twitter clones, various kinds of applications, and it just lets you easily launch them so that you don't have to know how to install any individual application on your server. I think CoGov potentially might look something like that, where the applications are particular kinds of governance, particular means of decision making, like Holacracy or Sociocracy, or like that would be one of the options, like launch a Sociocracy app or something like that, and then you can have your organization, you know, use that app to make whatever decisions. But I think the open source part is, I mean, that's also a basic aspect. It's not owned by any one given entity. And there's just a principle around that, I think, which it's not to say that good technology can't be, you know, proprietary, because there's a lot of good proprietary technology, but that in the situation that we're in globally, where ownership and concentration of wealth is so becoming so extreme, and is when that's part of the problem, part of my desire has been to move towards means of interaction that don't depend upon those particular kinds of ownership, where ownership becomes returned to, you know, us, the users of the technology. So Sandstorm would be an example of that. Holochain would be another.
Cool. Yeah, I'd love to speak to Sandstorm. Would it be okay if I share my screen for a second?
Sure.
Can you guys see that?
Mm-hmm.
All right. So what it looks like on a brief read of Sandstorm is that they are promoting, like you said, Marco, this open source means of easily self-hosting open source applications. So in other words, I can't think of the name of it, but there is a social network standard that is operates in this mean, where anybody can pop up their own server to host this social network platform, but yet they are still coordinating somehow. And so this is an example of decentralized technology as opposed to centralized technology like Facebook. So you can see there what centralized technology looks like on the left, where there's one central server or set of servers all and every node, every user talks to that one central set. What it looks like things like Sandstorm are doing is they're allowing a bunch of different people to host versions of the app. Whether they're coordinated or not is a big, huge question, right? But then assuming that there is some level of coordination between the varying installations and hosting, self-hosting of the instance of the application, you get a decentralized structure. And on the right, you get what Holochain is proposing, which is distributed structures. So just kind of one of the neat analogies to make is like, what looks the strongest and most stable of those three structures? And generally, clearly, the distributed net on the right looks the strongest, looks like it can be the most stable. So that's the idea, is that there isn't even a difference anymore between being a client and a server. There isn't an idea of self-hosting because every single node is its own host. Every single node is hosting the application and the application's data. I hope that answered that question.
Yeah, thanks. That's helpful.
Yeah, I stopped sharing now.
So no one else has any other questions. I had another question that arose from this, and I'm thinking of the Cosmos Collective or the Infinite Conversations. There's three or four tiers, so somebody that just joined will not have access to somebody that's been on there for 3 or 4 years. Same with maybe a Quaker group or something like that. There's everybody that's a part of the community, but there's also those that are within certain groups. So there's more of a decentralization, I suppose, with that.
Maybe that sounds like this currency. Maybe the question of like I'm sorry, go ahead, good, Raymond, but I mean, you're kind of talking about influence and like social currency in a way, right?
Mm-hmm. And I guess that's what I was kind of getting at is how does that tie in with what the paper's talking about with, the influence. I can't remember the exact term. I don't have it in front of me right now, but those with more influence, for lack of
better. Yeah. Okay, so yeah, there's a bunch of topics there. There's influence currency, and which is kind of a weight in decision making. It sounds like there's a membrane question there. Like, how does one get access to a membrane? How does one even get identified as someone who has a voice in a particular discussion? And those are handled in CoGov by collectives and councils within collectives. And there's also kind of feels like it might be you're drifting into like the transparency privacy topic. Like, is there, do these new users even get to know about the discussions that are happening and things in these other circles of the more veteran users? So I could talk about any and all of that if there's any particular thing that sounded more interesting.
I guess any and all, but more specifically, I'm personally interested in how, or even the philosophy behind where this came from. Was it sounds like there's even Native American influence. I'm familiar with Quaker. Jeffrey's familiar with Quaker groups. So there's a lot of similarities there. I was wondering kind of the origins of these ideas and taking that into maybe the more technical
side
of things.
The origins of the ideas, I guess, I think I kind of covered that in that it largely hinges on that, again, that recognition that individual sovereignty is paramount and that group coordination and community creation is all enhanced when individual sovereignty is felt and known. So in that, we look to create structures that that always represent that, and that anytime you're verging away from complete individual sovereignty and freedom, it's a it's a voluntary decision you're making, and that voluntary decision is probably recorded somewhere for everybody to see your commitment to that. And ultimately one of the next thoughts is, it's pretty hard to have a discussion or make decisions in one group of all 7.5 billion people on the planet. That wouldn't, probably be fruitful. to have everybody's voice be heard and such. So there is this necessary need to have membranes, like different layers and levels of grouping of where discussions happen, where decisions get made. And that naturally leads to a discussion of who has say in these varying circles. So once you identified membranes, part of the critical thing about membranes is decision making is generally pretty easy and flowing. Like if the five of us just wanted to decide, hey, we already agreed we're going to a movie, we just want to decide which movie we're going to go see, right? Like nobody's livelihood is at stake, you know, and so it could be an easygoing discussion. We ultimately there might be some disagreement at first, but then we all agree and go see a movie together. That can be totally different if we're all, the five of us are overseeing a fund of $1 million and we all decide how to spend it together. That discussion can get intensely more heated, potentially, at least in my experience, it certainly has the potential to be that. So as assets are involved in the discussion, these membranes become more and more important. Again, like if the five of us are going to go see a movie and hey, Fred wants to join us too. And Caroline wants to join us too. No problem. Yeah, come on along. Easy. All of a sudden, Fred and Caroline want to just join the discussion, have a say in how we spend $1 million. Maybe not such an easy decision. So membranes generally, in my experience, seem to be about assets and management, stewarding of assets. And the idea of getting away from ownership and into stewarding. So we recognize that really everything, the inherent oneness of all things, the inherent sharing of our resources on the planet, that any particular piece of those resources that we seem to have a greater say or control over is only our stewardship over that for a temporary time. And so, yeah, there's some Native American influence there, right? So anyway, determining who has stewardship over what assets is what the membranes of councils and collectives essentially allow you to do. We say, and then a further breakdown of that can be said that any particular asset that a particular council or collective oversees can actually be broken down into a currency that identifies individuals who actually have a greater ownership/stewardship in a particular asset. That's called an equity currency. And it actually represents a ownership/stewardship in a particular asset. And influence currency is another idea represented in the paper that is about decision-making authority, essentially, over any particular topic or assets, is a lot of times what it boils down to. Does anybody have more say than anybody else? Or is it a completely one voice, one vote kind of system? All of that is possible by the holding of influence currency. So some people can hold more, or you could have a system where everybody's holding equal amounts. So another philosophical point made throughout the paper is that while ultimately decisions do come down to a resolution, right, which ultimately comes down to contributing your voice to that resolution in the form of something called a vote. Like there's no way around it. There's something called a vote that kind of does happen at some point, right? Your individual proposal, how to resolve something, resolve the discussion or an idea. But that it encourages the idea that if we can never have things come down to a vote, we're probably doing better as a community. That if there's discussion happening, a proposal's made, and the magic is happening in the iteration of that proposal, so that by the time we even finalize the proposal, and we even really agree on what we're even talking about and what we might do, there's already kind of like a consensus created. And at that point, it's just a formality to go ahead and say, yeah, we all agree, let's do this. Or perhaps it's a formality to say, well, most of us agreed there was a dissenting voice. We'd like to make sure that process has been recorded by the co-glove layer, and perhaps that dissenting voice is also going to have a recording as well. So you have all of that decided and recorded. I could go on and on, but
that's very helpful. And I do like the idea of councils of 10, so it doesn't get too expansive there. And I really enjoyed that section, and it made a lot of sense. So. I'll work on my technical jargon there.
Right. Yeah, that's been an important number. 10 to 12, I've heard that over and over. And I particularly reference the work of Community Planet in discovering that number just through real life work with groups of people. And when does it get really difficult, even with a great facilitator present, when does it get really difficult to manage moving things forward? And that's been the wisdom that's come forth.
One example that I could imagine these kinds of the technology layer being helpful would be a particular project like a book. Jeffrey, for example, is writing a series of novels, and he's the author, so he's a principal equity stakeholder, let's say, like in that project, owner of that project. But he's not alone in it. He has editors working with him, book designers, marketers, etc. And in a traditional publishing situation, you know, he would submit that book to a publisher, and then they would work out a contract, and the publisher would take on certain rights, and he would retain certain other rights. But they would be fronting the money, and they would be, you know, ideally taking charge of the promotion and so forth. And it would participate in this whole schema and this whole set of rules that were set out. But we're not doing it that way because Jeffrey, as a co-op member, is also an owner. He's also the publisher. He is a co-publisher. He's a co-owner, not only of the text of his creative work, but also of the means of production and the means of distribution of that text, along with others. So we could imagine a collective that is dedicated to Jeffrey's work, where each person who contributes to that project is recognized by the record of contributions and the life cycle of whatever that work is going to do in the world. It may be sold, it may be turned into a movie, who knows what may come of it. But somehow the sort of some would call it a smart contract, but I think it's more than that, because it really would bring together the intelligence of the group into creating the best possible work of art, and then also guide how that group would be, you know, would continue to benefit from the success of the work. And that could all be sort of provided by, or like the framework for that, the could be provided by the technical layer, as long as we have the human understanding of what it means to be working together in that way, because it's a very different kind of way of doing things than the traditional model.
Right.
And then,
I think okay.
Well, just to say, I mean, that could scale to other levels of the organization. Like a whole journal involves a lot of different people, and there's a different kind of way that we would configure that. But we'd be able to really like recognize everybody who's really participating appropriately.
Right. Exactly. In that discussion, there is inherent the differentiation of equity currency. So these are categories of currency, right? And each application, each instance of an application built on GoGov can define particular currencies. These are categories of currencies, one being equity currency. So you could say that there's an equity currency based on the intellectual property ownership of particular work. You could then say, you know, part of the discussion, and when you have an intellectual property, a work, is how do we as a collective best share that work with the world, right? So obviously there can be a lot of effort that goes into that part as well. And so in that, there's going to be a discussion and a clarity created around clearly logged agreements, right? And logged in the form of currency flow as to, does your contribution to the sharing of that work get you equity in the work itself? Or does that represent something different? Does that represent an equity in a sales number, an ultimate value flow is determined, you know, I'll bring some 3D current world terms back in. If we're selling things for dollars, for money, sales, like does your contribution represent a certain percentage of that only, but doesn't actually give you equity in the work itself. Like, those kind of things can all be determined, and that type of currency falls under what I'm calling fiat, and I'm not sure I like that name ultimately, but fiat is kind of like catch-all currency category for any type of value flow, any type of metric that you want to have get tracked that doesn't fall into any of the other categories. And so contributions to the sharing of work, in other words, could be one of those. So you're recognizing whether it's the time contributions or just an amount of currency that will flow based on the completion of an accountability towards that end. All of those things are possible. And then, of course, ultimately, the influence currency over the work, does the original creator maintain, you know, these are the questions you get to ask and get have represented by metrics within the system by looking at the currency flow. Does the original creator in that work maintain 100% of the influence currency over what happens with that work? Right. And it doesn't necessarily have to be exactly congruent with equity ownership either. So you can have greater influence currency, but share more equity ownership or vice versa.
I have a practical, well, maybe you're not the right person to ask it, but I'm going to ask it anyway. So I tried to load Holochain onto my computer, but it requires a fair amount of Unix savvy in order to do that. I have a Mac, and Unix is integral to the Mac, but the Unix savviness that I need to do that is not in me, and I can't find the right resources to do it. Do you have any suggestions on how? I mean, it would be nice to get it up and running and try some of these things, you know, try some early experimentations with it.
Yeah, I would actually be, you're asking the right person for sure. Although I can say that I was on the core development team with Holochain for about 7 months, primarily in the first few months. I was actually working on core development, getting the alpha release out and working on some of the initial sample apps, ultimately moved into kind of more of touring around, doing sharing through the hackathon tour in Europe I did, and then ultimately just leaving that membrane altogether so I could focus on what my core passion was, which is building this layer on top of Holochain. So that being said, it's been 3 or 4 months since I've been in the core development circles to really be totally on top of the latest releases. But I will tell you, you know, share that it's in alpha right now. So you're definitely going to expect, you know, a little bit of a bumpy road when you go to install. You never know quite the exact status or whether the latest build might have a little bit of buggy thing going on. It's really not something they're sharing with the world. It's definitely for the brave explorers who wish to join at this stage. And I would definitely extend the offer that if you are committed to doing that and you want help, let's set up a time and let's do some screen sharing and we'll make sure we figure it out for you.
It's probably, as I said, it's probably pretty basic. It's just navigating the directory structure and things like that, you know, to some extent.
Yeah.
Because you have that and setting up, you know, pipes or whatever and these kinds of things in order for it to work, you know, paths and stuff like that. So
Yeah. So I've gone through the installation with people a couple dozen times and it is evolving, of course, with each incremental release. So again, yeah, if you're committed to that, reach out to me and
It's not the first time I've worked with the alpha or beta versions of software. So, you know, I understand the caveats on the problem.
Yeah, for sure. But we're honored as the Holochain team to have people make the choice to be an explorer. So let me know if you want help with that.
Okay, thank you.
John, do you have any questions?
I'm not sure that I have a direct question. I don't know if this is helpful at all. Can you hear me okay? Mm-hmm. Okay. But I've been enjoying the conversation, and I came here mostly because I wanted to learn something, and I'm beginning to. Maybe then I can reread the paper. With, you know, the explanations that have been offered and the conversations that have been had here. I really appreciate that you mentioned, Raymond, a higher level of consciousness is a deeper understanding of patterns. And in one paragraph you mentioned every living being governs each other with every interaction that they have. And then later in that paragraph, I'm sorry, I don't have a whole paragraph, I didn't write it down. You do mention that there's perhaps you can become more influential in decisions that affect others in those areas. So I'm interested in this, the difference and what determines governance from influence. And this is just my private sort of angst around these issues because I want to have influence, but I don't necessarily want a thumbs up or thumbs down vote. There are some things that I could appreciate why you want an up or thumbs down vote if it's, you know, for a congressman or representative or you're in a that kind of traditional institutional setting or you're a shareholder or whatever. But I think the challenge for myself and the complex systems that are influencing me and maybe that I could influence even in small ways. I'm attracted to that distributed network, and the centralized, the decentralized, and the distributed. And you mentioned that was more stable, the distributed. And that's sort of what kind of worries me, is coming up with something that's the most stable. I know I'm just throwing these out there. I don't hopefully to stimulate some sort of because I'll tell you a little story. I had a friend, a very close friend. This was before the internet days. I think things have changed considerably since then. But she passed out. They put her in she went to an emergency room. They took x-rays. They said she had a big brain tumor. And, they showed her the brain tumor on an x-ray. And there was the doctor, he said he was going to do the surgery. At that, they were going to do that right in like the next 10 minutes. And she just noted that this brain surgeon, she said he looked like he was in high school. He was just a kid. And that as they were wheeling her to the surgery room, her companion who was with her, she says, "I hope this guy read the chapter." And those were the last words she said before she went to the surgery. Fortunately, the surgery was successful, and she did have a dramatic recovery. And it was a very transformative, ultimately, experience for her, I'm glad to say. But I think maybe we live in a world where, and no one asked her what her opinion was, and she realized that she was not the right person for anyone to make, you wouldn't ask her to, it would be irresponsible if they had asked her what her opinion was on this. She thought maybe, I guess she could have objected vociferously and they may not have done the surgery. So I think we're in those kinds of complex situations are rare, fortunately, for most of us. But now, if she had her device with her, she might start looking at, for another expert opinion on this. But I think that's the nature of these distributed networks. If they get too stable, how are we going to deal with the turbulence and the occasional impasse, conflict, dilemma? When each of these conflicts, dilemmas, impasses have a different texture to them and a different kind of intensity, and some of them are very mild and don't need a lot of attention, but some of them have enormous intensity. So these are the kind of unfair questions I'm asking myself.
Oh, no, good stuff.
I just don't know. another question I had is where business can be conducted, and using Holochain to conduct business. And I'm just curious about what kind of business. Because I don't know that at Cosmos right now, I don't know what our business exactly is. If it's about transactions, money flows and things like that. I believe a lot of the work we're doing here is volunteer, and it's imaginal, and it can be extremely intense. And I don't know it needs a thumb down, thumb up vote, but I do think there's a lot of influence going in many different directions. And I believe we are here at this Cosmos to influence one another. I want to be influenced because I know I'm not an expert in very much. But what I am an expert in, I also know other people aren't able to evaluate what I say because they don't have the expertise. Yeah. So I'm an expert in something, but not much. But I know enough. Yeah. I'm efficient in some areas and can ask some good questions. And and others are going to be experts in areas where I'm not.
I hope to
ask as many useful questions for an interdisciplinary or transdisciplinary, our transdisciplinary projects like this could start taking off rather than crashing at the laundry pad. You know, so much going on that needs to be planned. Yeah. There's a lot that it's not, we're really not ready to scale anything up. Because I think some things that work at a smaller scale just don't scale up at all particularly well. We've seen that over and over again. Inventions that look great. But then when you try to scale them up, they crash. So,
I'm going to try to jump in because I'm making notes of all the things I want to respond to.
I'm sorry, I got a little long-winded there.
No, it's great. Thank you. Thank you. It's all great input and very fascinating discussion. Thank you. So first, coordination across disciplines is certainly a stated goal of what we can do with COGUP. It's in the paper. But I guess I want to respond to primarily when I say stable, what I think would most accurately represent the benefits of the kind of stability I'm talking about was that was an animated image. And what you would see is tens of thousands of nodes in the space, of which we're maybe have about 20 or 30. And rather than static lines connecting them all, you would see lines coming and going between various nodes for different reasons. But overall, what you have is just a bit stable holding place, right? But the connections are moving all the time. It's organically flowing and reforming constantly, but yet creating a net stability. I think that would most accurately represent what it is. You know, you make it three-dimensional and make it fractalized. You know, you get even more, biomimicry is core to the design of Holochain. And so, I guess ideally in terms, maybe the statement ought to be in the paper is we all govern each other, but we all influence each other. Maybe that's actually.
I think you can do both, but I think they have a different feeling to each of those words for me.
Right, right. And I guess in a perfect world, for sake of discussion and my level of understanding, my level of consciousness, is that influence ought to be determined roughly by the factors of how are you affected by the outcome one way or the other, and what expertise from past history of making these kind of decisions do you have? Some combination of that. And you definitely, one of the principles proposed throughout the paper is that we don't have answers. We're not trying to propose answers to questions, right? We're trying to create an environment where we can try different things and get feedback loops. Have a feedback loop going between what we try, the results of that, and then what we can try next. That is certainly the goal. So we're constantly iterating, we're constantly evolving our consciousness individually and collectively, getting smarter, having more access to data and information, learning more, making smarter decisions. And hopefully part of those smarter decisions is how we identify and give influence to others within the system.
And a lot of this is can't be quantified. A lot of it's all about qualities and moods and affects and and that juicy stuff that makes us human. But some of that what can be quantified, we need to pay attention to how we're quantifying that.
That's right. That's the goal.
That's the challenge. Yeah.
Right. To create a system, a standard system of recording our quantifications, right? All kinds of quantifications. We don't even define what they are ahead of time. We're just saying, let's have standard ways of identifying quantifications that are meaningful and to us making smart collective decisions and individual decisions.
Thank you.
Qualities can be captured as well. I mean, like in the case of a dissenting opinion on a decision that's made. I mean, the fact that you could trace back the history of that decision and see what the thinking process was, see what the points of agreement and disagreement were, that becomes a reference point for future decisions or future deliberations. Like the fact that that is recorded someplace and that you have access through the quantities to the qualities. So you could see what Doug had to say about it or what Jeffrey said, or you could go back to our video and watch the conversation and see really what played out. To me, like having that record is a way of establishing pathways for memory. It's a way of establishing pathways for social and cultural memory. And I mean, what concerns me, one of the things that concerns me about the centralized systems is that we have gatekeepers and guardians of the memory, you know, of our cultural memory, of what we can remember and what we are guided to forget. And that has a very distorting effects on what we ultimately do with the information that we have. So, you know, there's kind of the bigger planetary question and the civilizational question. I don't know how to address those other than looking at our actual circumstances and our actual relationships. Like this is the area where we can start to make a difference is in how we interact with each other. And then whether or not we can scale up our particular interactions, we could start at least creating models for, you know, that could be built upon in other contexts. So
for sure, it strikes me as super creepy that the conglomerative advertising tracker systems out there probably know more about my behavior than I recognize about my own behavior. That's a little bit creepy, let alone the fact they know it for everybody. I'd at least like to know that, right? I would like, if we're going to have that information tracked, could I at least have access to my own behavior patterns that I might not be able to see?
But the economic incentives are there for you not to have that the same access. I mean, that asymmetry is built in.
Yeah.
And what I see is the potential of Holochain, and I mean, it's part of the ethos of these decentralized and distributed frameworks and apps, and it's kind of a movement, I think, is in a way it's just going around the system. Because, you know, I can't take on Wall Street. I can't take on the industrial military complex. You know, we can't do that, but we can kind of outsmart them, I think, by designing better systems that attract more people to use them because there are going to be better benefits in the end. And so, this is a relatively small inchoate effort, but I think that by linking up the various initiatives that are going on and by starting to develop these kind of common languages and common structures, distributed structures, I think the bet is that we could move toward the world that we want rather than continue on the path that we're on. I want to ask one more question, Raymond, before we get to the end of the 90 minutes. It's kind of an idealistic question, but I think it's, you know, with the technical and the kind of the philosophical discussions we've had, I would want to know, if you were wildly successful, if CoGov was wildly successful, you know, beyond your dreams, like what would, or at the limit of your dreams, let's say, since you still have to be able to talk about it, what would that look like? What would the world look like if this works?
Yeah, so one of the most exciting things I have in my mind that I don't think is all that far off, if this is embraced, whether it's CoGov or not, if we do have a standards layer of any kind, right, is this interface that you can open up and have your selections of, you know, obviously your filters on what kind of things you want to see, but where every collective stewardship over assets is represented as a collective on at a dot on as a node on the screen, very similar to what we were looking at earlier when I shared my screen. Now all these nodes are connected with how and when they're interacting, and show to represent their interaction between each other, a value flow going between each other, a browsable network of web that you can browse into, click any one of those nodes, look at what that membrane is, what their mission and vision values, what are they doing in the world, what are they proposing to do, and then having the ability to go through and look at their history of governance, looking at who's making decisions, who's having influence, and through that transparent view of the ledger of operations and decisions and proposals and value flows and everything else that's recorded in the system, you get a sense for who everybody is and what their ultimate motivations are and what their patterns of behavior are, so that you have greater choice in how and if you want to interact with them in any way. And this also allows us to inherently see where power and value flow is centralizing. And so really start to get asked more questions about where we see centralizations of value flow happening. We get to ask maybe look more intensely at those and see if it's better to, start moving away from that centralization that's happening there and all those kind of questions. But yeah, having that be a very browsable, interactive user experience available to anybody and everybody at any time is definitely something I see on the horizon. That's super exciting to me.
Like what? So let me see. I'm seeing what you're seeing. Like I'm on my phone. I open it up and there's an app, CoGov app maybe, and there are nodes for all the different communities, all the different contexts in which this is being used. Some things I have access to, other things I don't. Like if it's local government of a city in Yugoslavia or something, not Yugoslavia, Croatia, I wouldn't have access to their decisions, but they might be a node in the sort of total map of all the different nodes that have influence and governance over different aspects of the world. Or another, one asset might be Cosmos. It might be, here's the Cosmos node, and this is what it's doing, and here are the ways I interface with it. Here's where I have influence. Here's where I have equity or other, access points. And I'm able to interact there. Then I can move into some other context that I have, maybe my local government.
Yeah.
And, those would all be interconnected. I mean, they're not seen as separate. And
that's right.
I'm able to participate to the degree that I am able and wish to in the ways that energy and decision making and resources are flowing
right
different plate, different right. nodes.
Yeah, exactly. And not to open the can of worms of privacy and transparency with this little few minutes we have left, but ultimately, my vision is definitely a heavy level of transparency. So that yes, in fact, you could probably find your way into the government of Yugoslavia, some district of Yugoslavia, and see what's happening there if you wanted. And yes, another thing you mentioned that is inherent is there's not really a big differentiation between the things, the collective enterprises we recognize as governments versus the ones we recognize as businesses versus the ones we recognize as communities and neighborhood associations, and town councils, and even bridge clubs. All of these things are just, these are people coming together with a shared mission and vision and a shared purpose that they want to share their energy in. And they create a membrane that we call a collective and system that you can call, any interface can call anything they want. But yeah, this is totally browsable. And so obviously if you do have access, and Holochain is inherently a very transparent way of, just like a blockchain solution, it's a very transparent way of having data exist in the world. there are ways to register those so that you can have this browsable interface and ways to hide things if you want to be more private. But ultimately a pretty high level of discoverability.
Okay, cool. Doug, Jeffrey, John, any last questions or thoughts?
Well, I've really enjoyed our discussion today. It's really opened me up to areas I need to study a little more diligently. So I may not be an expert yet, but if I keep, you know, sharing, you know, good feelings and multiple perspectives from others who are more expert, I believe I can move towards something that's a little more efficient than where I'm at. So it's good to know when you're a beginner, in other words, and to take the, you know, to be interested in stuff that you're, you know, very confused about. And this has been a confusing area for me. And yet I know that Marco has been really drawn to Holochain, and we've had other discussions about this, and from people that I really respect, who are drawn to this kind of investigation. So thank you for this opportunity, Raymond. I really appreciate it.
Thank you. Thank you for the opportunity and for the great contribution to the discussion.
Thank you.
I'd also like to thank you for coming in and talking to us. I think this transparency issue is possibly one of the more important things that you've talked about in terms of what Holochain and what Holochain itself and then what COGAV offers, I think, this transparency. Because obviously, it's, you know, people being people will still do rotten things even through COGAV. But if you can at least see who's doing the work, you can adjust and compensate for it. And of course, in the current systems, it's just about impossible to do. So, you know, I think transparency may be a very important element to this kind of thing.
Yep. It really is the starting point for Holochain, that it's pretty transparent, and you have to actually do a lot of work to be untransparent.
Yeah. And for the follow-up on the practical side, I'll get your email from Marco and we'll coordinate if you're
okay. Great. I look forward to that, Jack.
Cool. All right. Well, I'd love to see you when you're in Boulder. Let's have a cup of coffee or something if you're going to be around.
For sure. Yeah, man. Look forward to that.
Yeah, I really appreciate you joining us for this. It's cool. And it's challenging, I think, but I think it's going to be really powerful to be able to translate between very distinct narratives and discourses. You know, like we're a lot of times talking about consciousness and cosmology and very kind of out there stuff, weird phenomena, stuff like that. But I don't think it's fundamentally like out of bounds from what people who are much more into the technology side are doing. I think we're like working on different sides of the elephant or different sides of the, you know, the same phenomenon. We're trying to find our way to that ecological civilization that just more beautiful future. So I feel like if we could join forces or, you know, coordinate our distributed nodes in beautiful ways, that we're going to be a lot more effective overall. So I'm glad to have this conversation.
Yeah, it feels very much like forces joined for sure. And definitely with the underlying goal of raising collective consciousness on the planet being just simply providing access to information to be able to identify the patterns collectively and individually. And so all those topics you mentioned, yeah, are part of the information that have a play into the patterns of our ability to understand the patterns. No matter how esoteric or out there it might be, if there's any truth to it, it can affect the patterns that we're experiencing on this planet. And having some people talking about that and bringing it forth into the collective discussion is critical. So,
cool.
Yeah,
I'm glad that you all are open to it, because it's just going to get weirder.
Sure. Thank you so much, Marco. I really appreciate your take on all this, and as well as everybody on the call. Very intriguing and inviting discussion.
Yeah, thank you, Ray. Take care.
Bye, guys.
Thank you all. See you next time.